And they run through our ass like shit through a tin horn, man, and we could not stop them.
It's ridiculous that they do. That was a huge colony. Well, we didn't miss it. You know, the typical rah, 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 zip, boom, bah, boo.
You don't cuss. You don't drink. So what are your vices?
I have been known to chew a bit of tobacco when I get a little tired or watching film.
Hey, I'm Coach O. I just love my Hummer. I have my Hummer. You need a Hummer? Tell them about it, JoJo.
They've won the biggest championship, and that's the championship of life.
Gas control. Everybody just do your job. You understand that?
Welcome in to the latest episode of That SEC Podcast. I'm your host, Michael Bratton. I go by SEC Mike on Twitter, and I'm joined, as always, by my cousin Shane, who goes by Big Orange Vols on Twitter. What are you up to, you big Tennessee homer?
Hey, buddy, what's going on?
Hey, Shane, I believe, how many days are we into the new year here? We're in January 3rd, and I hear you've already put aside your New Year's resolution.
Oh, Mike, it's been a rough week, brother. It's been a rough week. Had a great week. In fact, maybe that's what it was. It was too good. Mm-hmm. And, I fell off the wagon a little bit. But don't worry, boys and girls. I'll be back on it soon.
Maybe next year you'll make it to week two.
That's what I'm thinking. Maybe 2020 is my year, you know?
All right, Shay, we got a lot of action to get into. It's been a little while since we recorded here, so let's jump right into it. And speaking of having a bad week, Shane, old Derek Dooley finally came up and bit Missouri in the ass here as the Tigers get upset 38-33 to Oklahoma State in the Liberty Bowl. Shane, what was the main takeaway from this one? For me, immediately, this is 2 years in a row. Missouri's, you know, catching fire in November, and they just have a dead bowl game. And yeah, they just had, I mean, this is Drew Locke, best quarterback in program history. He's going to leave without a damn bowl win. It's just disappointing for me.
Yeah, this was a frustrating game for me as well. It just seemed like, I don't know. When it got down there to the end and, you know, it looked like they had a chance to win this thing. They relied on Drew Locke's mobility to get that first down. And I was just like, you know, here we got, you know, the golden goose, man. The guy is accurate. He's one of the best, if not the best, quarterback in the SEC at this moment. And this is what you do. You rely on his legs. I just thought it was a horrible play called in the game.
Yeah, and for anyone that missed it, to set the scene, as Shane said there, I want to say it was like 4th and 3. If they were not in the red zone, they were very close. Obviously a 5-point game, so they had to go for it. But instead of throwing the ball, they had a one-on-one on the left side of the field. There was no safety help. I mean, you got Drew Locke. You figure you like your odds there. Instead, they go to the short side of the field on kind of like a read option where it's just the only option really was Drew Locke to get the first down. He comes up about a half a yard short, and Derek Dooley was facing a ton of question marks for that decision after the game. It just really made no sense at all to me.
No, they blew it, man. They absolutely blew this game, and that was just one of the many this week.
Shane, I mean, I don't know how you lose a bowl game with 637 yards of total offense, but Missouri found a way. But, you know, kind of like I hit on the last podcast, I don't think this necessarily halts the momentum of Barry Odom's program. I think they will be one of the favorites in the SEC East looking ahead to 2019, but, of course, a lot's going to happen between now and then, but just 2 years in a row, two disappointing bowl games. Barry Odom's got to get that fixed moving forward.
I mean, did it not kind of feel like that Vanderbilt game? I mean, just like the offense couldn't be stopped, but they just had no answers for defense. I mean, I want to blame Derek Dooley, but the fact of the matter is your quarterback had 373 yards passing. Your running back had, you know, 204 yards, and it was just like everything they did, Oklahoma State had an answer for. So, I mean, I'm a little more upset about the defense than I am the offense.
Well, I mean, that's kind of been an issue the whole time there for Barry Odom. But you figure if you got a guy that Drew Locke is probably going to be a first-round pick, you got to – I hate to keep hammering the same point, but you got to put it in his hands to get that win, and they just didn't do it.
Yeah.
All right, Shane, so disappointment there for Missouri, but a huge performance – for Texas A&M in the Gator Bowl. They beat the hell out of NC State 52-13. And Kellen Mond, he didn't even really have that great of a game, Shane. I mean, he came out with a 62-yard run to open the game. That was a hell of a moment. But after that, he was kind of shaky, but it didn't really matter because this was probably the best performance, you know, complete performance of the Jimbo Fisher era to date. Texas A&M just put a whooping on a very good NC State team that had 9 wins this season.
Absolutely. And it was kind of close there for a little bit, but man, that second half, it was over. The Aggies, I felt like this was going to be a blowout. I didn't feel like North Carolina State was as good as people said they were. Mm-hmm. You know, even what was that one guy that said if this was an SEC, if they had an SEC logo on the side of their helmet, they'd be a top 10 team or something like that. Do you remember that one?
Oh, Danny Cannell, baby. He strikes again. If they were in the SEC, he said they'd be a top 10 program. And I mean, they just got their ass handed to them by top 25 SEC team, that's for sure.
Yeah, I have a feeling if they were in the SEC, they would be like Tennessee without a bowl game. They had no answer for Travion Williams. And when he got going, boy, did he get going.
Yeah, and obviously, Shane, we hit on that leading up to this game. He was 169 yards away from becoming Texas A&M's all-time leader for rushing yards in a single season, not career, but in a single season. And he was getting close, Shane, and then he busted loose for a 93-yarder. He was about 10 away, I think it was about 20 away when he busted for that 93-yarder. Mm-hmm. That put him at 230. You know, he finished with 236, 3 touchdowns. He was a difference maker. And, you know, Shane, for the end of his career, Texas A&M people, they keep giving me shit that I like Benny Snell and say he's the best back in the SEC. I still stand by that, but I think down the stretch, there probably was no one running better than Travion Williams. Final 5 games of his career, 107 yards, 2 touchdowns, 228 yards and a touchdown, 167 and 2 touchdowns, 198 and 2 touchdowns, and then finally the 236, 3 touchdowns in the Gator Bowl, which is a Gator Bowl record too. He was just balling out of control there.
Yeah, he was. I put a thing on there. I think he had... So if you add all that up, I think it was like 800 yards or something like that in 5 games. And our leading rusher had at Tennessee had 600 all season. You know, it's just like, I mean, this guy is on another planet. And I that's one thing I love about Texas A&M was just the balance they had. And I think mm-hmm. that helped. And that's kind of what hindered Benny, you know, just getting too one-dimensional. But that you couldn't do that with Texas A&M because – Mond did prove that he can throw the ball and he can make big plays when he needs to, and you just couldn't load the box. And after you keep hitting these guys, you see it every time. The second half, they get a little tired, they get a little weak, and then that's when Williams really started to shine.
Yeah, Shane, and you know, I mentioned Travion as his last game. For anyone that didn't see it, Thursday evening, Travion Williams declared for the NFL draft. And he joins their center, Eric McCoy, their outstanding center. He also declared. Mm-hmm. That goes along with Tyrell Dotson, their linebacker. He is declared. And their All-American tight end, Jay Sternberger, he is also declared. So A&M's losing 4 guys to the NFL draft early. I think every one of those guys is going to be tough to replace. But, you know, the way they're recruiting there in College Station, it's none of those are devastating, of course. You want all Americans and all SEC running backs back. But, you know, I think it's also good for the program when you're sending that many guys to the NFL. And, you know, the last note I have on that Gator Bowl, Shane, I mean, this was probably my favorite moment of the bowl season to date. Cullen Gillespie, the former walk-on, former linebacker there for A&M, wears the number 12. You know, that's an honor down there in College Station. Mm-hmm. He got in the game there at the very end, and he had to break about 4 tackles on one play on a 5-yard run. But he did it, Shane, and he punched through the end zone. And I just thought that was a hell of a moment. And that's a perfect moment for a guy that, you know, obviously I thought he was a pretty good linebacker, but with Jimbo Fisher came in there, there's no fullbacks on the roster. Mm-hmm. They asked this guy to be the most thankless position on the team, I think, fullback. So, and he finally got, you know, he got his only touchdown of his career in his final attempt. I thought that's kind of what's special about college football to me.
Well, Mike, I'd like to root for the guy, but that wasn't targeting. if you ask me. If you remember when we went down there at Texas A&M and Nigel Warrior apparently targeted, hit him, got knocked out of the game.
Mm-hmm.
If you watch the replay, Nigel did not target him, and he got kicked off the field, and then we went on to lose that game. So as much as I like to root for Cullen, it's kind of hard because later in the game, he hit somebody, and it looked like targeting. And, they were all – I mean, you talk about pumped up. That fan base was pumped up for the 12th man that game, I tell you.
Well, now we know Cousin Shane, he'll hold a grudge for three seasons ago.
Yeah, that's right, man. It's hard. It's hard when I see – I'm kind of glad his mullet has retired, Mike.
All right, Shane, let's jump to, like you kind of hit on it there, SEC, you know, not a great bowl season for some of these teams. Mississippi State falls in the Outback Bowl to an Iowa team that I don't think was even that good. Iowa 27, Mississippi State 22. How about this, Shane, for a stat? I mean, this is one of the most bizarre stats of the bowl season. Iowa finished the game with negative 15 rushing yards. They find a way to get it done. Mississippi State had a couple of key turnovers, three total. Iowa had two as well, but zero penalty yards for Iowa. Mississippi State had a couple that were brutal, eight penalties for 90 yards, and there was a fourth quarter drop by a receiver. I believe it was Stephen Guidry that dropped the ball, and it just popped right up to an Iowa defensive back. I mean, this was just another brutal performance overall for Mississippi State's offense.
Absolutely. And the play calling, this is what got me nuts. It was just it felt like they're just going to let Nick run every play. And it felt like they would call I made a comment like it's back in the NCAA days when you go five wide, you know, you're going to run verticals, but the real play was either Nick Fitzgerald's going to scramble to the left or the right. That's what it felt like. And it caught them. It's another game that came down to the end, and they just did not get away from what they were doing. They didn't. There was no creativity or something, you know. I mean, your leading receiver had like 16 yards or something, like two receptions. Nobody had more than two or three receptions. It was just all run, and there was just nothing. It was terrible play calling.
And this is just kind of the constant theme we've seen all year, Shane. I mean, a brilliant defensive performance.
Mm-hmm.
And they just don't come away with the win time and time again because of this offense. And, you know, I think that one of the more troubling things, you know, so Mississippi State got the ball back. I want to say there was 2.5-3 minutes on the clock, which, you know, obviously the clock stops with first downs in college football. So that's plenty of time to drive the length of the field if you need to.
Yeah.
And I just had no faith in Mississippi State to do it. I mean, sometimes I have to write a story and it has to be published on the game the moment the clock hit zero.
Mm-hmm.
And I had it written when Mississippi State got the ball, because I was like, there's no way in hell they're going to drive down the field. I had no confidence in them to do it. That's exactly how it played out. What does that say, Shane, when we've got a fifth-year senior quarterback and he's one of the most prolific players in Mississippi State history, but you just kind of you have no faith in this guy. I don't know if it was him or the offense or, like you said, the play calling to get a touchdown drive when it's needed at the most.
Yeah, there was just no confidence in his arm. And you know what drives me nuts is Keaton Thompson came in a couple of times, and it was the exact same thing. So it makes you wonder, what's going to happen next year? Is it going to be the same offense with Keaton running left or right? I mean, they've got to do something. They've got to expand this offense because they are they're so predictable right now.
And a lot of Mississippi State fans, Shane, pretty fired up, pretty, you know, I don't think they're ready to fire Joe Moorhead. I mean, I did see a couple. I think there's just, you know, everyone's got some crazy fans. But how much confidence do you have, Shane, in Joe Moorhead just based on this year? You know, final record of 8-5 with one of the best defenses in the nation. And a lot of that talent's leaving. Some of it's coming back, but it's going to be somewhat of an overhaul there on the offense as well.
Yeah.
How much faith do you have in Joe Moorhead's program heading into 2019?
Zero. Absolutely zero. I mean, we brought him in for offense, and if it weren't for the defense that was already there, they would have lost a lot more games, Mike. I mean, look at this game. Their rush, Iowa, I think they had negative yards rushing. I mean, that's,
yeah, negative 15.
I mean, come on. They cannot run the ball, and you're still going to lose a game because of your offense? It's just, I don't know. I'm a little worried because that defense isn't going to be as good next year, and I don't see the offense getting better.
Iowa also 1 of 11 on third down. So, yeah, they could do anything. They still found a way. So, not good there. Okay, let's jump to the Fiesta Bowl, Shane, where I know this one makes you happy because LSU comes away with a 40-32 win over UCF. And I was feeling pretty good, Shane, early on. UCF jumped out to a 14-3 lead. I thought they were going to steal this thing, and they decapitated Joe Burrow nearly.
So the only thing I'm going to say about it is the only reason I didn't get up in 1 second is because I got the wind knocked out of me, and I would have got up immediately if that didn't happen.
I mean, that guy got up, and he damn delivered after that. What are your main thoughts on this one?
Well, first off, I'd like to congratulate LSU Tigers for their national championship, Mike, you know? and kudos to UCF. I got to give it to them. A lot of people came out and they're just, you know, they really did come out and played some aggressive ball. But, you know, and a lot of people talking about how the quarterback wasn't there and we got to remember that. And yes, that was a huge factor. They didn't have their quarterback. But LSU had like 10 players on defense not playing. I mean, they had wide receivers playing cornerback. So kudos to LSU and Coach O. And not dropping this game because it looked like they were going to there for a minute, but they came through for me, and I love it.
I can't believe I had some people hit me up on Twitter talking about what a bitch Joe Burrow was for. I mean, he was bleeding in the face after getting that hit, and he did remain down. I thought his season was over. I thought there was a chance his career was over. I mean, it was that bad looking. Yeah, he was down for a while, but he walked off the field, Shane, and then from that point on, he did throw a pick six. That's kind of, which a lot of times, you know, that's a momentum swing that cannot be overcome.
Mm-hmm.
Joe Burrow bounces back, throws for 394, 4 touchdowns. He was on fire, and, you know, I think they woke up a little bit, and Shane, if LSU's passing game, I know obviously they're not playing UCF-type teams that often, but if they can have this kind of consistency in the passing game, LSU is going to be tough to beat next year.
Yeah, I like it. I love the grit that Burrow had. I'm not going to lie. I was a little frustrated when he threw that pick. You know, and I was even more frustrated at how UCF reacted to it, standing over him. And, you know, just that there was no call for that. But it just kind of fueled the fire, man. And this team bought in, and they were fired up after that, man. It was all Tigers. And everything that UCF tried to do, LSU had an answer for it.
And after the game, Shane, Devin White, Joe Burrow, Coach O, they were asked, all these obvious questions were coming, and thankfully they were asked a lot of them, but can UCF play in the SEC? Here's Coach O wouldn't really take the bait, but Devin White, Joe Burrow, they did answer the question. So let's jump to those comments.
So, I mean, I don't really, you know, think they could play in the SEC week in and week out with the style of play they play with.
Look, they're a hell of a team, but as far as a physical game, we play in the SEC every week. So I've played more physical games than that, for sure.
All right, Shane, so pretty bold takes there. And, you know, before I get your thoughts on this, Shane, because like you said, UCF, I didn't give them, of course, I picked them to win the game, but I just thought they would, I don't know, I just didn't know how bought in LSU would be. You mentioned all their defensive starters being out. I thought this could potentially be a trap game where they just didn't show up, and they certainly did, and even though they got down big. But here's what I want to throw at you, Shane, because while I was impressed with UCF, I got to give them some credit. If they play in the SEC, here's the thing. Next week, Shane, they're playing Georgia.
Yeah.
The week after, they're playing Florida. The week after, they're playing Auburn. They finish that up with Alabama. I mean, they're not going to win any of those.
Mm-mm.
You know what I mean? Like they'll put up a good fight, but and maybe they do win one or two.
Yeah.
But I think two would be a huge stretch. But maybe they win one, and then you just got to you put those back to back to back. I mean, that's what LSU has been through. That's what Georgia. I mean, that's what all the schools have been through. So that's the difference there. What are your thoughts on what Devin White and Joe Burrow had to say?
Man, he's spot on. These guys would not survive the SEC schedule. An SEC gauntlet would rip UCF apart just because they're not built that way. They're not built as physical as – I mean, you got to be big and gritty and deep to make it – I mean, look, just shows you how deep you have to be to make, to be playing in a bowl game with, like I said, 10, 11 starters out on defense, you know. Now, some of that was because they're waiting for the NFL, but there was a lot of injuries on the team too because they did an SEC gauntlet. So to UCF, like I said, kudos for them for hanging in there. But LSU got the best UCF. UCF didn't get the best LSU. Could you imagine these guys playing week three down there on the down there in Death Valley? I mean, what do you think the score would have been then?
I mean, like I said, I'm trying not to totally dismiss UCF because they showed me something. So, but UCF, yeah, I think they probably would have scored, you know, 20 points maybe, but they probably would have given up 50. You know, I mean, I'm just being honest.
Yeah, enough of UCF. Get them out of here, Mike. Get them off the bucket list. Next.
Yes, speaking of the bucket list, Shane, I got this one right. Thank you for picking against Kentucky because the Wildcats get it done. 27-24 beat. They upset Penn State, outright upset, in the Citrus Bowl. Benny Snellshade became Kentucky's all-time leading rusher. This another heck of a game here by my boy Benny, 144 yards, two touchdowns. I mean, he carried the team. Josh Allen, the defense, they were outstanding as well. What's your main takeaway from James Franklin going down?
Great, man. Great. Because like you said, they were number three on the list. And Kentucky came out, man. I mean, when this thing, you got to remember, toward the end of the third quarter was 27-7. This really wasn't a ball game at all there toward the end. And, you know, they kind of let them get in there and make it a little bit interesting toward the end. But kudos to Kentucky, man. They came out with a game script and they stuck with it.
Yeah, and Mark Stoops, Shane, he wins game number 10. We've hit on that time and time again. This is the first time since, I believe, 1970, is it 77 or 71, one of those two. So he earns an automatic two-year extension. Good for Mark Stoops. But, you know, I knew this was going to be a great game, Shane. First possession, Penn State. You know, they get stuffed there on third down. They're in their own territory. They run a fake punt on a fourth and three. Kentucky was ready for it, stuffed them. And if you didn't see it, Mark Stoops ran out on the field, yelled right at James Franklin, something like, "Bring it on." He was ready, man. And that's what this team is, man. I don't think a lot of people count them out. I'm already starting to hear it, Shane. I can't believe it. I mean, no one's picking them to win this game. No one's picking them. I mean, hardly anyone picked them to win any of the games they won this year. They're already saying, you know, this is like a one-hit wonder. I've heard that already, which is crazy to me. Yes, they're losing a lot of players, but I think this is something that, you know, he's building this team to success because basically most of the offense will be back. Of course, Benny Snell's already announced he's leaving. I think this is going to be a team that is going to be a tough out for the rest of his time there. But what I really wanted to hit on with this, Shane, I don't know if you caught this after the game, Josh Allen in the locker room says, I don't have the exact quote here, but he basically says, "I'm the number one pick in the NFL. If it's not me, who is it?" What are your thoughts on that?
That's the attitude you want from a number one pick, Mike. You know, just you want that alpha dog on your team. And that's who he is. And he played great. He's played great all season. And, he, you know, here talking about a potential first selection, a first pick in the draft, you know what I'm saying? And he's not sitting out like Greedy, like Debo. He came out there to play for his team, and that's just kind of what Kentucky's built up there, that family environment. And a lot of people were coming in this bowl game, probably didn't care much about it, but Kentucky did. Kentucky had a lot to prove. They've had that chip on their shoulder, and it all started on defense with that man right there.
Yeah, Josh Allen, three sacks in the game. Kentucky, Penn State, neither one of them converted a third down in the first half. So it was a little ugly. It was ugly at first, but both teams kind of caught fire there in the second half, making it a really good game. And, I'm just proud and happy for Kentucky fans. I mean, this is a season they'll never forget. And You know, obviously they're not going to necessarily go to a New Year's Six game next year or something, but they're not going to fall off a cliff either. That would be my take.
For sure, man. Proud of them.
Oh,
they did good.
One other Benny Snell stat, Shane. I wanted to throw this out at you. Benny Snell, third all-time in SEC history in rushing touchdowns. Tebow has 57. Herschel Walker, 49. Benny Snell right there at 48. That just gives you an idea of what kind of career he's had. And, of course, he only did that in three seasons.
Wait, how many has Tebow got?
Tebow has 57.
Rushing touchdowns?
Correct. But, again, he did that in 4 years. So.
Yeah. No, I knew he had a lot of rushing touchdowns. I didn't know it was the record. Mm-hmm. So, man, that's a pretty impressive stat to be even near on that list for Benny. So, if he had another year, who knows? He may have broke that one.
All right, Shane, final bowl game we got to break down here, the Sugar Bowl. This was one of the very few games I nailed. Texas wins 28-21 over the Bulldogs. I know I called it, but you thought Georgia would win big here. How surprised were you by the outcome here?
Very. Absolutely. I mean, I don't know. I should have known it when Uga got chased off by the damn cow that, you know, at the start of the game. I was just like, man, something just doesn't feel right. But I don't know, man. It just felt like Georgia just didn't unleash. You know what I'm saying? Like, I'm watching this game, and then when they got down and they just kind of went – hurry up, spread, just, you know, hitting their weapons. That, I mean, they have the fastest wide receivers. They got the fastest running backs. They got, I believe, the most talented quarterback on the field. And when they finally let him play, it was too late. It was the fourth quarter. I don't know. And there's a lot of drops. It's just an ugly damn game. I was surprised. I really was. This one was my biggest surprise.
Yeah, I mean, it just had all the classic signs to me, Shane, because this is a team, you know, I think it was really disappointing, obviously, that, you know, they were commenting so much during the actual playoff and that they didn't show up for their game. That was the biggest disappointment. But it just spoke to me, Shane, that these guys were so, you know, in tune to what was going on during the playoff, mm-hmm. because in their head, it's just playoff, playoff, playoff. They obviously didn't make the field. I kind of saw this one coming. You know, Jake Fromm, he had an all right game, but even he was as sharp as he was in that SEC championship game. I got to give a ton of credit to the Texas quarterback, Sam Ettlinger. I had never really even watched much of this guy, but he's a tough little bastard.
Yeah.
And, he had a good game.
It's,
but...
it's like they've never seen a mobile quarterback before. And then on the flip side of the coin, Georgia's got the biggest damn offensive line I've ever seen, and they could not stop them. Every time it was, if they decided to blitz, you might as well just hang up that down because it was a sack or it was a hurry, and it was just they had no answers up front. They couldn't stop the quarterback from running. I mean, it was bad, bad play call. And then here we are in the fourth quarter. I think there's like 10 minutes left, and they show Jake Fromm is sitting there at like 98 passing yards. I'm just like, okay, so you're not running. Your quarterback's got less than 100 yards. What are we doing on offense here?
Yeah, I mean, it's the Cade curse, Shane, that's for sure.
Yeah.
But, you know, I thought one thing that was really interesting, I mean, I kind of liked the approach the team was taking with Justin Fields leading up to the game. You know, he was traveling with the team. He was taking reps. They said there would be no, you know, no difference in how they used him all season. But they, you know, they kept showing him on the game, on the sideline. I thought most of the time he looked kind of disinterested. Mm-hmm. And I thought this would have been a perfect game for when the offense is struggling, why not throw him out there? Because at this point, you're not going to really affect Fromm's development. You're not going to, you know, hurt his feelings because he knows Fields is leaving. It just made no sense. I didn't know what the heck they were doing there. And then after the game, apparently he didn't even meet with the media. He just kind of took off.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I guess because they don't really have much of a third-string quarterback, maybe that's why they brought him on. But now that I look back at it, I think that was kind of mishandled. And then another quarterback news, Shade. I just thought this was kind of funny. People were giving me shit on Twitter for saying it was disrespectful. I meant it as a compliment to Ettlinger, but for anyone that didn't see it, Shane, you know, the quarterbacks have an armband with the play sheet on it.
Yeah.
Number 8, Shane, did you see what it said?
Yeah, I can't remember, but I did see it.
So number eight, and I swear to God, this is true. If anyone needs photo proof, I have the photo here. But the number eight play call on Texas's armband was, "Go fuck yourself, bitch."
I wonder how many times they called that at the line of scrimmage, you know?
I mean, leave it up to Tom Herman. I mean, he's a real clown, but I mean, I thought that was kind of, I mean, I don't know what was up with that, but it was pretty bizarre.
Well, let me ask you something. Back to Fields. Here we are in a big ball game, needing a spark, and I hate to compare the two, but we're doing it. Here, last year, we had Alabama having trouble with Georgia. What did they do? They go to the younger quarterback to try something different. You know what I'm saying? And Georgia couldn't get anything going on offense. What did they have to lose? It's not like Jake Fromm's going to transfer out, but who knows? What if Fields comes in there and just takes off with the job? Maybe next year we're talking about Fields as a quarterback. Maybe you still have both of them on your roster. They had nothing to lose, and they just didn't try anything. So I don't know if that's more the Kirby or Chaney, you know?
Yeah, and that was kind of my point there with Fields, Shane. I mean, they're saying, according to all reports, he's going to leave. But Kirby's, you know, was kind of out there saying, if he'd like to stay, we'd love to have him.
Mm-hmm.
Why in the hell would he stay if you're not even going to use him?
Exactly. I mean,
this was a perfect game to, you know, say, for whatever reason, we're not awake on offense. Let's just let this guy play a quarter. Give him a quarter.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? I mean, if he sucks, hey, guess what? You're already sucking. It changes nothing. If he comes out and pulls a Tua like Tua did last year, my God, we may have, you know what? People are comparing this guy to Cam Newton with like a better arm. I mean, if he really is that, I mean, I love Jake Fromm. We've said several times he's SEC's number two quarterback. But if this guy's Cam Newton with a better arm, then he's going to be number one before long. So I don't know. I mean,
they
had the opportunity. They didn't use it. And that's why they're losing them. And this is why they're losing 2 5-star quarterbacks in 2 years. I mean, it's just a mismanage of the situation. If you got a guy like that just sitting on the bench, you got to use him.
Yeah, I agree, man. 100%.
So how about this, Shane? Speaking of Kirby Smart, I'm not trying to bury the guy because, you know, obviously he's doing a good job, but this was really interesting. After the game, these comparisons are not going to go away until Kirby does something Mark Richt never did. But Mark Richt, compared to Kirby Smart, Shane, with their first 3 years at Georgia, this is pretty remarkable. Mark Richt was 32-8. Kirby Smart, 32-10. So very similar. So added 2 losses there. But here's where things really get freaky, Shane. Mark Richt, first year, 8-4. Kirby Smart's first year, 8-5. Mark Richt's second year, 13-1. Kirby Smart's second year, 13-2. Mark Richt's third year, 11-3. And Smart's third year, 11-3. So, I mean, these parallels are, I mean, you're talking 3 years now. I mean, this is getting kind of weird, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, let me ask you, Mike. Do you think Kirby's a good coach, or you think just Georgia is in a great spot? I mean, you got to admit, Georgia it should be the mecca of all recruiting right now. Mm-hmm. And it just seems like that any coach that comes in there that's got some sort of people skills could get the talent in there. Do you think Kirby is overrated, or is it way too soon?
No, I think it's fair. I think he's overrated as a game day coach, but he is, I think he's a very good coach. He's an elite recruiter. I think outside of Nick Saban, he's maybe the best in the nation. Obviously, he learned from Saban, and he's much younger. So by no means is questioning his future, but I think we forget just how good Mark Richt was when he first got to Georgia because his last years were not that good. His recent career there at Miami was not that good. So the opinion of him is rather low. But we also got to remember this is Kirby Smart's, you know, first time as a head coach. So there's going to be these issues, but he's got to clean a lot of this up. I mean, this is nothing Georgia fans don't know. And they're ready to build a statue of him last year because they almost won the national championship. Mm-hmm. But that LSU game, go back and watch that. He did not have his team ready.
Yeah.
But, you know, flip it 2 weeks later to Florida, and they were ready. They beat the hell out of the Gators. So,
right.
I mean, he's clearly not a bad coach, but maybe not as elite. And I'll word it this way, Shane. I think Dan Mullen is a lot better coach than Kirby Smart.
Mm-hmm.
But I think Kirby Smart's a lot better recruiter. So I don't even know. I don't know which one you'd prefer there, but I think I would take the better recruiter than the better coach, because I think it's easier, obviously, to coach up elite talent. I think it's much harder to coach up a good roster and make them elite in the SEC.
Yeah, I'm with you. Give me talent all day long, because if the talent's on the field, there's always a chance you win. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. I mean, sometimes if you don't have the talent, you've got to have a perfect game or just something fall your way. And Georgia, I don't see the recruiting ever slowing down. I don't know. I mean, how many more Mark Richt type years are we going to have before they get frustrated again and try to get him out of there?
All right, Shane. So that's a bowl recap, but let's jump around the league here.
Let's do it.
Now let's go around the league. Around the league.
We haven't decided how we're going to play the guys, so, and I wouldn't tell you if I did. So, you know, I don't mind you asking a question, but I don't need to answer it.
No, I mean, I'll be whistling Rocky Top by the end of the week, all our play. I mean, it's just like, right? I mean, just hear it over and over, and, you know, like every other or every third song, it'll roll through within the crowd noise that we play at practice, so you just you get used to it. It's a catchy tune, right? I mean,
this game's going to be a street fight. This game's going to be a street fight. I mean, some of you guys don't know who Kimbo Slice is. Hopefully you do. And you go back to it, man, this isn't a sanctioned fight. This is a street fight. I mean, this is the SEC. So, man, it's time. It's time to put on the hard hat. Launch bail. Let's get to work.
All right, Shane, let's start with Florida. And I'm starting with Florida because, kind of like A&M, they've had a lot of guys leave early. So I just want to do kind of like a little recap of the guys that have declared early. Chauncey Gardner, I mean, that one's already known. But their middle linebacker, Voshon Joseph, Shane, he's announced he's going pro. Ja'Kai Polite, their leading sack artist, outside linebacker, he's going pro. Jordan Scarlett, the running back, he's going pro. Starting right tackle, Jawan Taylor, also turning pro. So Gators are losing a lot, Shane. Four, there's five offensive linemen. The defense is going to have to be rebuilt a little bit. I mean, what are your thoughts when you hear all those guys leaving early for Florida?
Oh, man. It sucks, especially with the offensive line. So they've got one returning up front, right? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that's not what you want. Especially, I don't know. I think they're going to keep Felipe Franks as a starting quarterback next year, so that kind of helps that you got a little bit of, a little bit of seniority there. But, golly, can you imagine if they try to roll out that new kid at quarterback and then a whole new offensive line? That could be a mess toward the beginning of the season.
Yeah, and they open with what should be a pretty tough challenge, Shane. They're playing Miami. Mm-hmm. And I believe that game's in Orlando. So, I mean, Florida should win that game, but by no means is that a slam dunk. We'll have to see what Manny Diaz, the new Miami coach, can do there. But that's not going to be easy. And how about this, Shane? I thought this was pretty interesting. You never know how much of this stuff is real or not, but this is a reliable source here. Daniel Jeremiah of the NFL Network, he put it out there, Shane, that he is hearing that Dan Mullen is a name to watch, a name that's there in NFL circles for a potential coaching job. Not saying that he's interviewing, not saying that he's definitely leaving for the NFL, but I've actually heard this once or twice while he was at Mississippi State, so he must have some interest in NFL coaching. But how could you ever see Dan Mullen making the jump to the NFL?
Oh, man, I never thought about that. No, I don't. I really think that college is perfect for him. Mm-hmm. It seems like he really likes just those kids coming out of high school. He seems like a good, like a dad type figure, you know. So
right.
I think that's more his cup of tea. But I mean, crazier things have happened for sure.
Yeah, the shoe game just doesn't work in recruiting in the NFL, you know.
It doesn't. Hey, I don't know if you saw this, but I saw an interesting comment about talking about Florida. UCF quarterback Mackenzie Milton. Did you see what he said about Florida?
Oh, yeah. Tell everybody, Shane.
He said the Knights are better than Florida, and they should be playing twice in Orlando. Oh, my God.
I mean, UCF, I mean, they lose, but they don't stop talking, do they?
No, they're going down swinging, brother.
Oh, final note here on Florida, Shane. The Miami AD, after they named Manny Diaz head coach, Jeff Blake, I believe is this guy's name, and this was pretty interesting. He said, final message you got for Hurricane fans? He said, yeah, we're only 243 days away till we beat them Gators.
Golly, everybody calling the Gators out, huh? Oh, man. Do you think, honestly, right now, well, I don't know, it's so early. I'm kind of curious what they do up front for the Florida. I'm kind of curious what this offense is going to look like next year. But at this moment, I don't think Miami could beat Florida. Do you? This is like way too early, but just curious if you thought there was even a shot here.
I mean, I'll give them a shot, but I would certainly favor Florida, and they'll be the favorite going into that one.
Do you see the video? I know we're getting off topic here, but you know, they got this new coach, right? What's his name down in Miami?
Manny Diaz.
Yeah, so Manny Diaz, he committed to
Temple.
Temple. And he was there for 21 minutes, and then he went to Miami. Well, they put a video on Temple Barstool or something like that up there, and they've got a video just talking about all the great things he did for the Temple University. It's playing this sad song and talking about the greatest 21 minutes ever. So if you didn't get a chance, you should check that video out.
All right, Shane, let's jump to Knoxville, where I just thought this was pretty funny. Kovaris Crouch, Shane, their new signee there, a linebacker. You know, he played running back and some linebacker there in high school. But he is at the U.S. Army All-American game, Shane, and obviously picked Tennessee, a big reason why. Jeremy Pruitt wants to play in his defense, thinks he'll maximize his talent, get him to the NFL as an elite linebacker. Obviously the bond here is pretty tight between Crouch and Pruitt, because Crouch has got himself a pretty good Jeremy Pruitt impersonation.
I heard you can do a pretty good impression of Jeremy Pruitt.
Bro, that's my dude, man.
Let's hear it. Let's see it.
So here you go, nice. Kovaris Crouch, I'm fit to build something down here in Tennessee, and I want you to be part of it. How that sound? You want me on your team. If you're playing in the backyard, you're going to pick somebody on your team, you're going to pick me. I'm on your team. I take care of my guys. That's good for it, man.
That's pretty good.
Actually, that was one of the better ones I've heard. Well, how about you? I mean, I know he does it a lot better than you.
You want to come to my team? I love it. Because, you know, you could kind of see him saying that, man. If there was anybody on Jeremy Pruitt's short list of recruits that he probably called on a daily basis, it was this guy. So they did a lot of bonding here, and I think it's awesome. The behind the scenes here. So you could tell he really likes the coach so far. So we'll see, but I'm looking forward to him being on campus for sure.
All right, Shane. So also staying with Tennessee, I think it's been 38 days since they've had an offensive coordinator, Shane. This is the longest offensive coordinator search, I think, in the history of not only college football, but high school, NFL, Canadian, European, wherever they play football. This has got to be the longest ongoing search. And now we got some new names out there, Shane. I'm going to throw them at you. Steve Sarkisian, Matt Canada, and old Jim Chaney. Jim Chaney, believe it or not, apparently Georgia fans want him run off. Tennessee fans want him come home. What are your thoughts on those three names? You got a favorite there among those three?
I like Sarkisian, man. I like the recruiting. I watched a lot of Atlanta offense this year because of fantasy football. But I'm not opposed to have him up here. I'm kind of torn on Chaney because we've done it. But, looking back at some of those videos, those highlights and stuff, you know, we had moments of really flashy offense. So that one I'm kind of curious about. But somebody was giving Sarkisian, everybody was talking about him on Twitter about his alcohol problems. But I put out there, but nobody wants to talk about how many alcoholics our horrible offense created last season. So, you know what I'm saying? It was a pretty bad product. So, that's kind of who I'm leaning toward right now. What about you, brother?
Well, I think of those three, Shane, I think the best guy, believe it or not, I think would be old Matt Canada.
You think so? Now he's at Maryland, right?
Yeah, he was the Maryland interim coach, Shane. So he was he's had a wild ride. I think he's kind of an interesting guy, kind of like Jeremy Pruitt. So, you know, he was the Maryland offensive coordinator, and then, of course, they had that tragedy there with the player died and the head coach got fired, so they gave him the interim title. And, hell, Shane, they beat Texas in the first week, and, you know, I obviously don't follow Maryland football, but they were by no means a disaster. But that's not why I think they should hire him. I think it's more to do with down there at LSU. That only lasted 1 year, and he really butted heads there with Coach O. He was at Pitt. I believe he was at Pitt for only 1 year as well, but he completely turned that thing around, got Nathan Peterman to be one of the nation's best passers.
Yeah.
And got him drafted in the NFL. And then he just, you know, he's been as horrible as he was before Matt Canada. Prior to that, he was at NC State, did a really good job there. But again, he had issues with the head coach. So clearly this guy is a little, you know, tough to deal with. But outside of that, Shane, the reason I would like him for Tennessee, based on what I've seen of him, what I know of him, well, first of all, Shane, except, you know, at LSU it didn't really work out, but from what I understand, there was really the main issue there was, believe it or not, I don't know how this is even possible, Coach O hired him, didn't understand what he was going to run on offense. I guess they just told him he was a good coordinator, so they hired him.
Yeah.
But he did not agree with his philosophy. He didn't like all the motions and the shifts and thought it was a soft offense. And there were some trust issues. Matt Canada kind of went behind Coach O's back on some things. And that was kind of the end of their relationship. So it didn't really work at LSU, but I don't think he was allowed to do what he wanted to do.
Yeah.
But outside of that, he's been successful everywhere. And what he kind of specializes in, Shane, is he takes teams that maybe, you know, they don't have the talent and they overperform because the scheme and the defenses just are not prepared for it. So I don't know. It's a very exotic looking offense.
Yeah.
But I don't necessarily think it's overly complicated because he can go from, I've seen him go from place to place and make a terrific impact in year one. So it's not that complicated. It looks complicated as hell, but I think that's because of the motions and the shifts and everything. But if you watch some highlights on old Matt Canada's offense, it's exotic looking, but it performs really well. And he's also a quarterback coach, which would be big. And my big thing against Jim Chaney, I mean, this is kind of an obvious statement, but it's really true with him. When he does not have the talent, Shane, he does not deliver.
Yeah.
And you can go back to early Tennessee when he was there. You can go to Arkansas. Arkansas fans were happy as can be to get rid of his ass. Pitt was not that good. Canada replaced Chaney.
Mm-hmm.
They were horrible, and they went immediately good. Georgia's offense the first year was not good under Chaney. So if Chaney does not have the right pieces, he is not proven to be a very good coordinator. And Sarkisian, I think that would be a solid hire. I think that's more of what Jeremy Pruitt wants. I don't know how long he'd stick around, but I don't think you make a hire based on, you know, who's going to be here that long. Because if you're hiring good assistants, they're going to be gone anyway, right, if you're doing well. So that, I don't know. If that's the guy, I wouldn't blame him. I think he is a really good recruiter, and I think that's kind of what Pruitt's wanting here, is an elite recruiter. But if he's looking for recruiting, Sarkisian, if he's looking for coaching, I'd go with Matt Canada.
And he likes to party, Mike. you know, Canada, I'm not against his offense. It's like a pro style spread, but there's a lot of, I don't know, like kind of what you talked about. It's like a disguising plays. Like you don't really know what they're doing. So it's an interesting offense. If you've never seen it, definitely should watch some of the videos, because it is interesting what they put on the field. You wouldn't see anything. I mean, Tennessee would look totally different next year if you saw Canada out there, for sure.
And I think that would be a good thing based on what we saw.
I mean, damn, we were like 120, Mike. So, yeah, anything would be better. We just want a pulse, man.
All right, Shane, final thing I've got here. Your buffet boy, Dana Holgorsen, was one of your favorites leading up to the season opener. He has left West Virginia, left a Power 5 program to go to Houston. It's not a move you see very often unless the Power 5 coach got fired, and Holgorsen certainly didn't get fired. But I believe he's getting something like $40 million deal, something crazy like that. I just wanted to hit on that just because it's so unusual. What are your thoughts, Shane, on Dana Holgorsen going from West Virginia to Houston?
I mean, if you take the money part out of it, it doesn't make sense to me. I thought, like, West Virginia, your next move should be to an SEC team or, you know, maybe somebody else a little bit higher in your own conference or something like that. But I don't know. It kind of surprised me. But then now money's in play. So we're talking $40 million. I mean, what kind of – you've kind of seen the numbers. If the money that he's getting paid this coming up year in Houston, what would that rank him with the coaches in the SEC, just ballpark? Would that be like top five, top 10?
No, I mean, it would be top 10.
Okay.
It wouldn't be, you know, it'd be right there. I think it would be right in the middle. But it is, I believe it's the highest salary or total contract ever given to a non-Power 5 coach. So he's getting a lot of respect. That's clearly, you know, I think is his main motivation here. And from what I understand, West Virginia was not really interested in committing to him long-term for whatever reason. I think a lot of that had to do with him. He was down there, I think, for 8 years.
Mm-hmm.
They never really won anything too. I mean, they were consistently good, but never, you know, they never won the conference or anything.
Yeah.
Just lost Will Grier. I think it's obvious they're probably going to take a step back next year. So I think this potentially is a good move for him because if they win, you know, 4, 5, 6 games next year, he may have gotten fired at West Virginia.
Yeah, that's
so now. So now he's looking at getting a big payday. Yes, he's kind of taking a step down, but I think if he has a couple, you know, like 10 or 11 win seasons, which I think Houston is in a really good position. They got a brand new stadium. It's really nice down there. I think they got to be one of the top programs at that level. If he can string together a couple of big years, I think he's going to be a top candidate to take a step up.
Yeah. I mean, Houston finished 8-5 this year. And, you know, they're in the same league with UCF and Memphis and all them guys. So I don't know. It just kind of surprises me that he would go to the AAC. But, I mean, crazier things have happened. And Houston obviously cares about football, or they wouldn't have a new field, or they wouldn't have probably one of the highest paid coaches in that conference. You know what I'm saying? So, I mean, if somebody's going to give me all that money and say, hey, anything you need when you get down here, we're going to make it easier and better for you to recruit. And, I mean, that just makes you feel good inside, brother. You know what I'm saying? So maybe he just wants to go somewhere where he's really wanted.
It makes me feel good inside,
yeah.
Shane. All right, Shane, final thing I've got. I forgot about this one. I didn't want to forget this because, I don't know, I just thought this was a pretty important message here. But Kyle Williams, former LSU great, just retired from the Buffalo Bills. He spent an entire NFL career at Buffalo. I think he was up there for 13 seasons.
Mm-hmm.
That's very rare these days, obviously, in the NFL, Shane. But why, you know, during his retirement press conference, what have you, he was just kind of asked about his upbringing and everything. And he had a really special moment here talking about just one of the influencers in his life. And I just thought this was an important message that I thought we should close on.
Okay.
After my sophomore year, we had a career day at school. And my history teacher at the time was my defensive coordinator in high school, and a friend of mine's dad was there. He's an insurance salesman in my hometown, and he was trying to brag on me about how great I'd done as a sophomore and, you know, gotten some accolades, this and that. And my defensive coordinator said at the time, he goes, yeah, he's a good player. He's a talented kid. He goes, but, you know, if he worked as hard as he could all the time and he played as hard as he could all the time, he'd be special. And in a 20-second interaction at a doorway in Ruston High School, it changed the trajectory of my life. Changed my attitude, it changed my vision, it changed who I was. And I shared it with the team and the coaches last night, and I told them, I said, you never know what makes the difference. And I've shared that with those men, you know, and I can't wait to go home and tell them. You know, I've told them before, but really changed the mindset and the vision of a 16-year-old kid, and like I said, changed the trajectory of my life.
All right, Shane. So, yeah, I mean, I just thought that was really cool, and, you know, I think it's an important message, particularly with the new year. You just never really know, Shane, who you could potentially affect by positive message? I mean, not necessarily, you know, just the impact, I guess, you can have, particularly on a young person's life. Clearly, this stuck with Kyle Williams for the rest of his life. And, you know, he's an all-timer for a reason. And, you know, he points back to this, just this exchange here.
Yeah, this was great, man. I just, like he said, it was just a small moment there in the hallway, and it stuck with him. And who knows, that video came out, it went viral. There may be a kid somewhere across the country, maybe an adult, you know, trying to get a better position at work or something like that, that maybe it helped them. So I just thought it was really cool. I've always been a big fan of Kyle Williams.
All right, Trey, that's all I got. You got anything before we hop off here?
Yeah, buddy, just a couple things here real quick. First, I wanted to touch base on our Bowl Manium Pick'em. We've only got one final game remaining, so that kind of narrows down who's going to get first place here. Let me get it pulled up here, Mike. All right, for first place right now, sitting at a total of 566 points, is the Bayou Bink One. And right behind him or her was BBN Samuel at 510. So this final game, you can only get 40 points. So Bayou, I think this one's yours. Nice. But I did want to congratulate BBN Samuel and Grant Goodwin for making the top three at this moment. Now, there's still some time for some movement there at the second, third spots. But now, down here at the bottom, next to Cousin Shane, there's a Bucket 72 is winning that one at 337 points. Our buddy Russ there, 367. So there's still some. I mean, this is getting close. Sleepy Joe. And at 368, Big Red and Black. So those three are battling it back and forth. Me and you, Mike, kind of just stuck right there in the middle, 17-19. We won't give up our picks just yet. we'll be doing that on the Monday show. But, yeah, just we are going to need some contact information, you know, your address and things like that. But we'll get closer to that next week. One last thing, Mike, if you got time, I'd like to read a review we got on iTunes.
Yeah, let's do it.
D-Swift 91, great podcast, 5-star. Now you know that this podcast is good when I'm rating it a 5-star, even though one of the hosts is a Tennessee homer and the other picked my Bulldogs to lose to Texas. I've been listening all season, and it's been a fun ride. I'm looking forward to listening to it in the offseason and for seasons to come. Keep up the great work, guys. So, D-Swift, I appreciate that. I appreciate all the listeners taking the time to hang out with us. We've scaled back a little bit. We're going to try to get more consistent. It's just a lot of things going on over the holidays, but we're going to try to put out three a week. Again, hanging out with us, those that got on iTunes gave us the ratings. That really does help a lot.
Yeah, we got a pretty cool Monday show coming up. I don't want to say who we got because it's not 100% yet, but I got some guests coming up, or they're scheduled to come up. So Monday should be pretty cool. We're going to be breaking down, obviously, the national championship game, but it's not going to just be Alabama talk. We got plenty of talk all around the league. So it's going to be a good one on Monday, Shane. I'm looking forward to it.
For sure.
All right, Shane. Thanks for joining me, as always. Right. And thank you, everyone, for tuning in. We really appreciate it. And we'll catch you on the next one.
All right. See you guys. Go Vols. All right, this one comes from D-Swift 91. It's 5 stars, labeled great podcast. Now you know that this is a podcast. God bless it. Let me get another drink here, Mike. All right. This one comes from D-Swift 91. Great podcast, 5 stars. Now you know that this is a... Let me try this one more time, Mike.
All right.
I still don't know why I'm reading these. You should...
I kind of like it. You doing it.
Yeah, I'm sure you do, man.